City of Nigeria.
Rock City of Nigeria.
This is Fresh 107.9.
Welcome to The Platform on Nigeria's number one radio station, Fresh 107.9 FM. I'm Bill Kuta. My name is Binga Oreshegun, and yes, I'm the man you just have to love. It's 1 minute past the hour, 10 o'clock, and we're going to be having a conversation with a big fish right here in the studio. Big fish, not just in the studio in Ogun State, and also here in Nigeria. And who am I talking about? I'm talking about a former governorship candidate of the People's Democratic Party and also a PDP chieftain. And we get to talk about Nigeria, basically. We also get to talk about him as well. Mm-hmm. What he's been doing lately, okay? The one and twos has been doing. We're going to be talking about everything altogether. We're going to be talking about Ogun State as well. And who am I talking about? I'm talking about Otumba Segun Showumi. You're welcome to The Platform.
Aspirant, actually. Not candidate.
Okay, yeah. Aspirant. Okay, apologies. Aspirant. Okay. Yeah. So, so nice to have you in the studio. Compliment of the season again.
It's nice to see you. Happy married life, freshly from the mint.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much. And you were quoted to have said something. And I picked it. And I loved it. You said that you do not have a bone of deceit in you. And you said, better not ask me a question. You will always have an answer as you see it. Because he said something that you are brave like that. And I'm so excited about this conversation we're about to have, because you're going to give me your honest opinion on everything concerning Nigeria, Ogun State, about the PDP, about everything. So let's have this conversation real quick.
It'll be a pleasure. Thank you. I'm here.
All right. It is The Platform. Okay. So, let's start. Compliment of the season once again. Let's start from the state of the Nigerian economy. You know, it has dampened the enthusiasm of Nigerians to celebrate the season as it should. Now, what do you think is happening to our country? Even as President Tinubu, in his Christmas message, he said that he remains committed and he's promising the nation hope. And even went ahead further to say that he will give us more palliative, even though the NLC said that, hey, don't give us palliative. Show us the core, concrete things, that your concrete measure on the way out of this. Out of this problem. Now, Otumba, I ask again. What is happening to our country? Where did we get it wrong?
Thank you very much. You know, when President Muhammadu Buhari became president in 2015. I wasn't in his party. I've never been in their party.
Okay.
I kept saying to myself that if he cannot do anything, assuming Buhari could not do anything, I had an expectation that he would be able to fix corruption, fight corruption, banish it, or do whatever he can to corruption, to bring it to the barest minimum and institute a new culture of consequence. Buhari spent 8 years and we couldn't do it. And I began to be scared that if Buhari spent 8 years with all of his track record and couldn't do it, have we gotten to a point where we can no longer do that? So when Ashadbola Ahmed Tinubu, President Tinubu,
yes,
eventually got declared as the president, you know, we were in another party, PDP, of course, I convinced myself that, well, the fact that two Democrats in Bola Tinubu and Atiku contested the presidential election, that whatever be the case, democracy was going to be the better off for it, because we're going to leave that era of military this, former that. Because, but I gave Bola Tinubu one small, you know,
edge.
Which was that I felt that if Ashaduola met Tinubu, President Tinubu, as he's called now, if he didn't know anything, I expected him to know about the economy. To tell you that I am grossly disappointed, frustratingly disappointed about him and his policies, is putting it mildly. I have now gotten to the point where I'm now scared that if Ashaduola Ahmed Tinubu, whom I thought would know about the economy, is fumbling with the economy like this, am I going to end up with the same view about him when he's done as I became about Buhari, based on expectations? What are the main things that Ashaduola Ahmed Tinubu has done wrong? Or maybe he did not avow his mind to. You see, the Canadian opinions around how to fix, manage, and structure an African economy cannot work here. Why? The world has started going too far in the direction of capitalism, private-public sector partnership, putting so much in the hands of the rich at the expense of the poor, without a social safety net that can accommodate the mass of the people. So I knew that once he started to fire on that trajectory, he was going to leave the mass of our people behind. And for an economy like ours that is mostly informal, don't let them tell you anything other than that, it's mostly informal, where only a small fraction of people earn a salary from government, and another small fraction earns a salary from organized private sector, the majority of the people are just eking a living via their own small businesses, whatever they can get by. You cannot run that type of economy as if you are chasing a GDP number of sustainability that is going to make your people excruciatingly poor and is going to impact inflation to such a level that they will not even be able to eat. So, if you look at what he has done, I'm removing subsidy, I'm trying to equalize the exchange rate, I'm going to this, I'm going to that. If you are someone who is looking at the economy from the point of view of how World Bank, IMF, and such silly organizations will say, go this way, you will say, well, he hasn't done anything other than what you expect them to tick in the box. But because I have always held a very strong view that that theory will not work here and has not worked here, and it has made the Nigerian nation and the Nigerian citizens significantly pressured over a long period of time, I expected him to budget for the poor, believing that if he approaches budgeting from the point of view of that, look, we are budgeting for the poor, then he's going to try to cover as many people who, because there are more poor people in the country, then that way, even if the rich are crying, they can find their way. Unfortunately, what is he doing? He's budgeting for cronies. He's budgeting for the rich. He's not even doing things that will make us, the poor, or the people in the country, get the impression that they are squeezing themselves as much as the people are being squeezed. Now, almost all the layers of budgeting, contributions, fund appropriation that serves the ruling class has not been reduced. You have removed subsidy, and it's been close to 7 months now, if I'm not mistaken. And it has taken you 7 months to figure out how much you are going to increase the salaries of the people, knowing fully well that it is from that salary that they go back into the market to participate in the rural commerce. You reduced a nation of 220 something million people to a nation of, you are saying you are doing subsidy. What does that, you are doing palliative? What does that mean?
Okay, now, some persons have said that it is too early to assess the administration.
Do you know how many people will die in 7 months? Do you know how many people will be dislocated in 7 months? Do you know how many people will not be able to go back to their farms in 7 months? Do you know how many families will be destroyed because of the struggles for just keeping a living in 7 months? Do you know how many people's health would have been impacted in 7 months? Do you know how many people would have been unduly agitated and frustrated in 7 months? Is a damn long time. Anybody who is interested in, you know, developmental economics, yes, will tell you that the first thing a leader thinks about is the low-hanging fruit. Things that can carry the people for some time while the systemic changes that needs to take place will take place. Look, I ask you, tell me, what explanation have you got to tell the Nigerian people why they should buy a bag of rice at more than 60,000 naira? And knowing fully well that it's almost like the staple food of the country now. What explanation have you got for telling the Nigerian people that inflation has gotten to such a point now that they can barely eat? Okay, if you say you have removed the subsidy and therefore you are getting more money, at what point in time do you tell yourself that that money that you are screening off because you don't want people to be, you know, stealing it, at what point in time are you going to tell yourself that you're going to plow it back into salary and wages? I'm not talking about palliative, because when you say you are doing palliative in our system, remember I started by saying Buhari could not fix corruption because you can see everything we're hearing. So it therefore means that you are taking the resources that the people could have easily enjoyed, you are throwing it to your corrupt friends, and you are expecting your corrupt friend, whom you know are extremely corrupt given the state of our nation, you are expecting them to give the people the succor, knowing fully well that the only thing that will happen is they will hoard it, they will chase the dollar in the black market, they will impact exchange rate, and at the end of the day, it's like taking a piece of fish, giving it to a cat, and telling the cat to please help you deliver it to the rats.
Okay, so in other words, Professor Wole Soyinka said that, he said something, that he waits for at least a year before reviewing the administration's program. But it's been 7 months since the president assumed office. Some policies have been formulated, implemented. You talked about the removal of subsidy, equalizing the foreign exchange,
which has not been able to equalize.
You know, but how well these policies is affecting Nigerians is another story entirely. But how will you describe, or should I say perhaps assess, the Nigerian economy before President Tinubu came in and when he assumed duty? I mean, are there good policies that you think maybe the president has taken since he assumed office? So what would be your 7 months general overview?
Okay, let me put it this way. You know, the opportunity that society has in democracy is not to pretend as if they are voting an individual who is running as an independent candidate. Okay. That's not what we have here. The opportunity that society has and the mass of the people have in a democracy is to punish political parties for their misdemeanor. They could not have been underneath the yoke of the 8 years of APC of Buhari and pretend as if, without really interrogating what they are expecting to get, that just by flipping the person to Bola Tinubu, things would change. Of course, I consider Bola Tinubu President Tinubu is cleaning a lot of the mess that was on ground. But hello, when a leader has the desire to work for the poor, you will see that the budgeting process will reflect that, okay, we cannot do business as usual. We, the fat turkeys, must squeeze ourselves so that the way we are living is closely more, you know, mirroring the way we expect society to live. You can't run a nation where your cost of feeding at the level of your budgeting, your cost of vehicles, your cost of all the things that will make you comfortable remains very high. But the mass of the people that you can't even pay a salary to because they are not even captured, are now going to be the one to deal with the impact of inflation, deal with the impact of the cost of foodstuff and all of that, deal with the impact of the fact they can't even find money. And you know what makes it more painful is that in terms of the quantum of money that Ashed Bola Ahmed Tinubu is getting because of the removal of subsidy, they are supposed to be awash with money. After all, the subsidy was being bled away. You are not bleeding that subsidy anymore. So you are supposed to have a lot more money, the money that you got from subsidy. That money you are getting from subsidy, they will tell you that they are impacting it on things that they can explain
to
themselves.
So what should they have done differently?
Thank you. You see, the budgeting philosophy of Nigeria has to always be, and I've been screaming this for years, has to be, let us have a budgeting philosophy of budgeting for the poor.
Just like what Oxfam.
When you are budgeting for the poor, the first question you are going to ask yourself is that, how will the poor eat? Whatever policy you need to put in place to make sure that the poor can eat at a sustainable level, you will find it in your agri policy, you will find it in your import and import duty issues, you will find it in your whatever. There are a lot of policies you can run there.
Do you agree that the border should be opened for rice to come in?
I think I think that this, the management of border and the management of forex and the management of petroleum and all that, borders down on what kind of playbook are you running. If you are not able to generate enough food on your own from growing food, why are you so unwilling to let food come in? After all, they are going to still buy it with money. You can put the tax on it, they're going to make their money. You will make money, the other people. Some people are buying crude oil from us. That's our own commodity. Can somebody now go and sit in their country and say, oh, we're not going to buy crude oil from Nigeria because we don't want to buy crude oil from... See, every product should be treated as a product. If Nigeria cannot get the competitive advantage to create either rice or whatever product we want to create here to such a level that we can compete and sell it at the level that the others are selling it, we don't need to be so excited about the fact that we are importing. What we need to first of all understand is that people are entitled to food. When you say they can't bring in the food, I hear you. You are talking about, oh, you want to grow the rice here, you want to do this. Have you been able to do that? Insecurity in the country has prevented people from even being able to farm in any large scale like that. All the rice mills and investment they put in the rice mill has failed because they can't get enough paddy rice and water to be able to grow the rice. So the mills are almost like a failed project already. And then in the meantime, you are explaining to yourself because of your so-called GDP manipulation of some economic theories that is not written by God. In the meantime, you are leaving 220 million people to be starving, to be stressed. And you are saying you are closing the... What makes it even more annoying is that I've come into Abeokuta a couple of days now only to be told that some custom officers in the most annoying and irritating manner will go to Lafayette and start shooting, going all over the place, saying that they are trying to catch the rice that has entered the country already. Was your duty not supposed to have stopped it at the border? If you could not stop it at the entry point, consider it lost. And if you think that it's affecting the economy too much, why can't you open it? The people that were buying the rice from abroad, are we buying it for free? The ones that are selling to the people that are eating it, are you dashing them? Okay, you wanted to do palliative. What did you use to do your palliative? Is it not the same rice? So your economic policy for a nation that is as large as ours has to be a little bit more consistent.
Okay.
They are running an economic policy that is driven towards effective usage of capital, towards capitalization and capitalism, which at the end of it is, oh, when you hear them talk, PPP, PPP, meaning that their only business in government is to sit down and, you know, do bazaar of assets so that those that are rich can take those assets, and then they'll be pretending as if they do not know that efficiency they are saying they cannot bring from the public sector, that the private sector will bring, that the price impact is going to be on the citizen who have no social security.
Now, talking about what would you do differently, you've talked about the area of food security, agriculture, and all of it. Now, another one is the issue of the petrol subsidy and the floating of the naira.
What would I have done differently?
Would you have done, yes.
To remove the subsidy without thinking through what you are going to do with the new money you are going to get is madness.
So what you're saying is that it wasn't well thought out.
No. It was a hopeless thing to do. It was an unfeeling thing to do. It was a very wicked thing to do. It was near a criminal thing to do, to take power on the first day and in a lackadaisical manner just say, I've removed subsidy. Let me tell you why. From the second, when you even say you are removing subsidy, you know what you are saying? You are telling the Nigerian people that the inefficiency in government, their inability to make sure that corruption does not impact something that impacts the life of the people, they are going to fail, and then they are going to put the burden of their failure on you and I. Because effectively we import petrol because we are trying to repair finally. I hear they're doing something there. When we import the petrol, we say we are selling it here. You don't have to do equalization. We don't do equalization for yam. We don't do equalization for tomato. You could have said you are no longer doing equalization. So the areas where that are close to border can have a different price. The further inland can have a different. Who sent you on equalization? You could have said you are increasing the price, but when you say you are removing subsidy, and your exchange rate is impacting the way it's impacting, even telling us that you are not even selling it at the most efficient price, what are you doing? Then made worse is that if you don't pay subsidy in month one, you are going to make saving in month one. If you don't pay subsidy in month two, after 7 months of not paying subsidy, you are going to make, you know what they call the subsidy value.
Okay.
The total amount of whatever it is that you were bleeding on subsidy, where is it? And you can't be awash with money if your intention is, okay, now we have a lot more money, let me give it to state governors and increase their allocation, without exactly asking yourself that, from our own history and attitude, why should you be doing cash transfer to people wholesale? What do I mean by that? You want to give people money. Can you not use the money banks or money agencies? You've done BVN, you've done this, you've done that. Can you not give them the money directly from yourself? Why do you have to carry all the 5 billion today? Go and give it to your governors, whom I like to describe as cats, and the subsidy I like to describe as fish. And then sit down in Abuja and be thinking that, okay, you have given them that money. You trust that it will get to the people. If it doesn't get to the people, how do you expect the people to tell you? Do you expect, if we had had a country that was being run efficiently, if we had had a country that there were consequences for people in government misbehaving, do you think we'll still be having this kind of challenges that we're having now? So what was he thinking? Okay, assuming it was a slight mistake at the beginning, in the last 7 months, where is the money?
All right, let's go back to the president now. During the Christmas, Bishop Matthew Kuka gave a message.
Yes.
All right. And the president also gave a message. But Bishop Matthew Kuka said something in his Christmas address. He said that President Tinubu has had enough time to think about how the many questions that are crying for answers. Okay. He said a lot of things, which means that the president has looked forward to him being president. So he should already have planned. Now, let's take it side by side with what the president said in his Christmas message. He said that, he empathized with Nigerians, the suffering and all, that he will give more palliatives. Now, looking at both Father Kuka's message and the president's message, do you think the president's Christmas message was hopeful enough, that the president has had enough time to think and plan? And also, how well do you think this is being demonstrated in terms of the policies he has introduced, in terms of his responses to the sufferings of Nigerians?
Okay. If I were the president,
yes,
and on day one, I also chose to say we can't pay subsidy because we don't have money, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I would have followed with within the next couple of days after that is to say something like, put a memo to all government agencies and the all arms of government, for the next 2 years, there's a moratorium of no buying any new car. This. I will skin the budget on our side, and I will say to the people that whatever we find in the pool can carry us for now. What will I be doing? I'll be trying to show the Nigerian that the pain that you are going to feel, I plan to feel it too. I would have right-sized the cabinet in such a way, if the law says I must have one minister per state, I would have stuck strictly to that 36 model. I won't go over and above. I will not tell myself that I'm going to carry 1,441 people on a junketing charade to Dubai. I won't do that.
No, they said it's not 1,000.
No, it is. Listen, they will compartmentalize who paid for what, who did that. That's also showing that they are not even sensitive. Because if they were sensitive, they would have understood that what we need now is for Nigeria to do programs that others will come into our country so it can percolate into our own system. We can't be a nation of people that just carry beggar bows all over the place, just running up and down, chasing what is not lost. I would have then said, okay, gentlemen, this palliative, this subsidy was originally intended for the Nigerian people across board. Now that I've removed it because some criminal elements are doing smuggling and all that, this entire subsidy money must be reapplied back directly to the Nigerian people. One of it is that I would have done the working out of how much is the salary increase that has to get to people. And that would have been 7 months is a long time to be thinking about that. I won't be doing, oh, I'll do 25,000 today, I'll do 30,000 today. Money you will allocate and people will just steal. Why don't you just give the civil servant a new salary so that when you give them a new salary, private sector will dovetail from that and also do their salary. When they have a little bit more money to spend, they can also, push up the commerce here. Why won't you do that? Why should a nation that has been around since 1914 in the world with other nations that was amalgamated and called Nigeria, why shouldn't they think that, okay, we have gotten to a point now where we have to have a, social security that covers people? What does Nigeria even guarantee to any of its citizens? Do you guarantee to your citizen breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Do you guarantee breakfast and dinner? What do you guarantee one meal that, okay, you are a Nigerian citizen, nothing is happening, you were just born, your dad died on the same day your mother died, this country has guaranteed you at least one meal every day. We have not done that.
Okay.
So, I'm trying to tell you that when you tell them as a philosophy that leave all this IMF, this alone for the meantime and face our country, you would have found out that they would have understood that the collective wealth of the nation is the creative and productive energy of the citizens of that nation. And the people that are prostrate because they can't even find anything to participate in the economic activity is going to eventually impact the economy. Then if you say there's no money in the country, assuming there isn't, the ones that you have been making, what is now pushing inflation? Because what is pushing the dollar? What is pushing the dollar is very simple. You are carrying the money that's available in the country, which you are not giving to the poor, which you are not giving to the middle class people, which you are giving to yourself and your friends and your crony and your wife and your children and everybody around you. And they are sneakily taking the same resources. They are taking it to the black market to come and now start impacting the very little dollar you say you want to do arbitrage. You want to remove arbitrage. Arbitrage is the difference between the official exchange rate and the black market.
Exactly.
How come you have not been able to close it? Which currency, which person in the world, which country in the world will have 200 million people and just leave his currency to be floating anyhow like paper on the water? Listen, their economic policies are too pro-rich. The rich aren't crying, no. Appointees are not crying. Politicians are not crying. Governors are not crying. The president is not crying. His wife, his children, and all of his people are not crying. No. The only people that are crying are the citizens of the country. And we have not put you, you have not managed to make yourself president, having been wanting to be president for so long, so that you can now become president. You are throwing your hands in the air. I'm not holding him fully responsible for the last administration, but for him to show us that he really means business, I don't expect him to be piecemealing the arrest and the prosecution of operators of the last administration. How are you going to come and start telling us that one nuisance was sitting there as the governor of our central bank and he has taken so much money, they are banding figure, they are throwing it all over the place and they don't think that is irritating? How are you going to tell us that they ran an agric policy through the CBN using our money to say they are doing agric rice, agric this, agric that? We can't find a grain of rice in the market and you are not asking them what happened here. How are you going to tell us that one nuisance in this country sat down there, say it's going to do Air Nigeria, went to go and carry plane of another country, painted it in our color, pretended as if we have an airline. We still don't have an airline. He's working freely.
All right, still talking.
So what I'm saying is that before you can be burdening the poor, you have a responsibility to burden the rich. Burden the rich, burden the former appointee, review the country, ensure that the country is going to be a place where everybody will smell the coffee and they will get the memo. And you can't do that. You can't have the moral authority to do that until they see that even from where you are sitting, you are not writing inside your budget that you are going to be using billions and billions of naira to be buying cars
so
for
yourself.
So you don't
think reviewing past administration is a waste of time?
No. You see, when a nation is as corrupt as ours, you are not reviewing any past administration for victimization. No! You will have to necessarily review them, because that's the only way we can become a nation of consequences
for bad behavior.
Because if you don't review them, okay, this man came, did his nonsense, went away with it, you too, you will come, you do your nonsense, you go with it, the next man, how much squeeze can you give the country?
All right.
But once you piggyback and say, okay, we have accepted now that anybody that goes into public service to go and serve immediately after he's finishing, whether his prison uniform is already sewn and ready, let him wear it and go and sit down there while we review him, the next man that is coming there will be careful. We grew up knowing that governors are probed. We grew up knowing fully well that presidents are probed. They jail presidents in other countries. We cannot convert our own into the inheritors of Solomon. We can't continue like this. Our population is too large. It is too young. It is too restive. It is too tribal for this type of thing. And those of us who are always screaming, let's do it well, let's do it well, let's do it well, we are asking that we should do it well. Not so much for the singular benefit of one individual like Segun or you. No, we're saying we should do it well because you know why? We are the most populous black nation on earth. Everywhere in the world, all black people have a subtle latent hope that if Nigeria gets it, the black man has gotten it. And then we are even made worse because we are even in a democracy. Can't you see what's happening all around us? All the countries around us, people are getting tired of democracy. Do you think that if something happens in this country, the people are not going to go to the streets and be jubilating? Why should we let it get to that?
Well, it will not get to that.
I know. But the only way is that you can't. Listen, there is a nexus between insecurity and poverty. When people get poor and unable to find a way, they are easily made available for crime. Just a few days ago, some innocent people were sitting in Plateau and may their soul rest in peace, may their family be consoled, may the land be healed. And somebody went there and started killing them. You have an armed forces, you have intelligence. I don't know what our own DSS does, I don't know what our NIA does. They never get any intelligence to nip anything in the bud. We are not the only nation in the world that have Fulani people now. Why are they not doing the same in other countries?
All right, that's a very valid question, but we need to go on this quick break. We've had 30 minutes to talk about Nigeria, but this time, when we're back from this break, we're going to be talking about Ogun State.
Okay.
We are going to be talking about you, and we're also going to be talking about your political party. Okay. Don't touch that radio. It's still the platform.
In the realm of colors.
Bàbá ni akari oluwa nílé iṣẹ́ IAS kò ṣẹ̀yìn ọlọ́run àtẹ̀yìn oníbàárà tẹ fẹ́ wa ẹ̀bùn ìmoore wa nìyí o kódà kò jẹ́ búlọ́ọ̀tì kan ló rà lójú ẹsẹ̀ bó o bá ti ń sanwó ilẹ̀ tó rà ni wàá gba káàdì ìrajà tiwantiwa shopping moment tí ẹ sì gba ìrẹsì ọ̀fadà adìẹ gbàǹkò èlùbọ́ dúdú èlùbọ́ funfun ẹja tilapia ẹran ògúnfe iṣu iyán àti ẹja àrọ̀ pẹ̀lú bí àwọn ènìyàn ṣe fẹ́ràn àgbàlá àwúrà pọ́kùkù tó dípò 500,000 naira tí wọ́n ń ta àgbàlá àwúrà pọ́kùkù Sokotoro ni ikoje ogata ediwo 200,000 naira pere le ma ra bayi ifanlagba ni ile agbala awura my 8 je fun gbogbo eni to bara ile yen lasiko yi pelu pe ati grade ile yen oju ona to tu ja gere lodori ile yen dipo 1 million naira ti won ta plot ile kan lagbegbe yen 650,000 naira pere le ma ra plot ile kan bayi december 27 odun yi lanfani yi mo o e pe 091-3901-1255
Oh yeah, pay your money from the back. I beg, I don't get change, yo.
Conductor, take the money.
When I don't come again. Where I won't find change for this big money now? Nah?
Okay, just take the money.
Auntie, I don't get change, yo. If you know, say you don't get change, you better calm down now.
Calm down, boss. No need for change. I go pay for everybody inside this bus. Plus you and the driver's there.
Cash, madam. You get money, yo.
No, be so. I just want to share the goodness. In fact, soft drink, bring one more Guinness for everyone.
It's always a good time to share goodness and spread positivity. Malta Guinness, enjoy a world of good.
And we're back on radio. It is still the platform on Nigeria's number one radio station. We have Otumba Segun Showmi right here in the studio. My name is Benga Oreshegun, the man you just have to love. So nice to meet you. All right, so let's talk about you.
Okay.
Let's talk about you for a bit.
Okay.
The last time I saw you, was during the build up to the governorship elections, in the state, and where we had conversation about issues concerning, regarding governance in the state and also the PDP. And I also heard that you've been doing some meetings, you've been doing some travelings, and I'm sure you've been getting updates, concerning happenings in Ogun State. And we have reviewed President Tinubu. Now, okay. Let's come down to Ogun State.
Okay.
The gateway state.
Okay.
Prince Dapo Abiodun is the governor of the state, which I believe is your friend. Is it safe to say he's your friend?
In fact, it's my... Okay, yeah, of course. Let me put it this way. Someone I really admire.
You really admire.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Prince Dapo, I'm sure you must have been hearing comments concerning governance in Ogun State. Please share with me those comments.
Okay, I tell you what I will say. We are challenged. Our party we're challenging him. We have not been successful at the lower. We've not been successful at the Court of Appeal. We're hoping and waiting for the Supreme Court. So let's just say we'll keep our fingers crossed on that. But if it is to review the second term, I have become really convinced that Governor Dapo Abiodun's major challenge, in my own opinion, is that Ogun is used to having a governor that they can easily access.
Okay.
And Ogun is used to having commissioners that can touch lives and mingle with people. And Ogun is used to, you know, that family environment where the governor is your man and, you know, like that. And I think that maybe he has not been lucky enough to find the type of aides that see themselves as an integral part of society. One problem. And so people feel his distance. The second area that I think that if he will listen and work on is that I think that there is a reason why a state capital is the seat of a governor. Imagine for a second that Bolame Tinubu as president now, rather than sleeping in Aso Rock in Abuja, chooses to always be in Lagos. When the governor is in the capital and when he's easily accessible, when he's in the government house or wherever, and people feel that they could reach him, even sometimes they just want to indulge him or they want to get indulged by him, it helps in making more people within that environment feel and understand what government is doing. The Dapo Abiodun government is speaking at a pitch that is not getting really down to the grassroots. But you see, what I say to people on this second term is that you cannot hold Dapo Abiodun as governor of my state responsible for removal of subsidy. The removal of subsidy cannot be impacting the whole country and then it will not impact Ogun. That would be mostly uncharitable because he didn't do that policy. You can't hold Dapo Abiodun responsible for the absence, you know, inflation eating into the price of food. He does not control the fiscal or the monetary policy. So if there's an increase in price of food all over the country, it's going to affect us. Luckily for Ogun, we have been able to, to his credit, we have stemmed insecurity a little bit. It has gone back small. Except for the cult issues that come now and then, which I can see that they are struggling with. All this time they say, they've come to keep people in one village, they've done that. That has kind of like reduced. Maybe the non-kinetic efforts is working. I think that our biggest problem in Ogun now is the quality of our roads.
The quality of the roads?
Yes. You know, we go around to other area, and I'm not putting all the blame on him because obviously he has not been governor for maybe 4 months, 4 years and a couple of months, 7 months. But we have to declare an emergency on our feeder roads, even within the state capital and all around. And I do not know why the model we used to run before, which is works, patching roads and all that, I don't know why it's not working. But truly and sincerely, nobody will come from any other state and enter our state and be proud of us. Our roads have gone, you know, below average. Gombe, better than us, Ibadan, better than Lagos. Almost everywhere around us is getting better than us in terms of road. So we need to declare an emergency here. Our GRE is a joke. So in that area, I want the governor to bring his eyes down and understand that what happens with road is that anybody that comes into the state, whether it's a visitor or a citizen, that road is the first thing that will give them an impression as to the quality of governance here. So he needs to declare an emergency there. I always pass him in terms of rural health. Now I always pass him. Why? Because when you go around, you'll be seeing the signatures of those health centers that are there. So I cannot remove any mark from him there. But I think that You know, people are different.
Okay.
And personality styles also differ.
Hmm.
But I would truly advise that he figures out a way to be more reachable for the citizens of this state.
More accessible.
He needs to figure out a way to do that. He has tried a bit after the election.
Okay.
I've noticed that he's gone to some of their events, he's gone to Mother Day, he's gone to this, he's gone to that. But it's not enough. A governor must know that people in the state, stakeholders in the state, must happily boast that our governor, when I call him, you call him back. When I speak to him, when I tell him I want to see him, you create space. And we have done it like that before. And then he needs to be a little bit more open-handed.
More open-handed.
Yeah, because people, you know, I'm giving you the feedback of the entire state, including people that are with him. People see him as a little bit tight-fisted. Maybe relative to how others have been doing here. I've never been governor here, and I know what I'm saying, but he has to be a little bit... You can't have the philosophy of...
When you say tight-fisted, isn't the way of dishing out money, or...
Well...
When you say tight-fisted, I look at Naira pounds.
No. Well... When I say tight-fisted, it's not me. I'm not in this party. I don't have enough tangential relationship with him. But from the feedback I'm getting from the people around him, maybe I don't know what he does and does not do, but I think that he feels that he's a bit stingy. And Dakwa Abiodun, governor, has no reason to be stingy, because even before he came into government, he was already a private sector player.
Okay.
If he wears a pair of shoes, you can imagine that his people too may like that. If he wears a particular dress, he might think that people like to copy their leaders. So he has to figure out a way to make sure that he makes his cabinet members or his appointees have a bit more money, so that his cabinet members can go back into the society and touch more lives. Because once they are doing that, more people will be happy. Once more people will be happy, more people will be satisfied. But if everything that comes into the states only finds its way into their own private pocket and never goes to the people, we will continue to hear this complaint. They're not giving us. There's nothing that I can say more than that. And then more importantly, let us keep our fingers crossed and see, maybe the Supreme Court may even say, carry your bag and go.
All right, let's talk about you a bit, Otumba. Like I said, the last time you were here, you talked about, you know, that was the build of the governorship elections. And
I still believe that my ideas are the best for the state.
Yes, but I'm talking about the People's Democratic Party.
My party.
Yes, your party. I have heard rumors, okay, that you want to become the chairman of your party.
Okay.
And also, and the thoughts that came to my mind when I heard that was that we've had different chairmen in the PDP. We've had the likes of which is a Condos. We've had the likes of Bamanga Tuku, Audu Ogbe, and all. What will an Otumba Segun Showumi be bringing anew to the PDP that this past chairman, who are in fact big names and who are big ideas,
couldn't bring?
They could not bring.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I didn't get up to start saying I want to be national chairman.
Like I said, rumors.
No, I'm not. It's not a rumor. It's a fact.
It's a fact. Okay.
A lot of people in the country, northerners and different sections of the nation, party faithful young people, some of their leaders too, just haven't been listening to the ideas that I always tell them on the inside and outside, feel that the party has lost three elections back to back.
Okay.
And it's almost on a bed that needs a serious surgical operation, to use that expression for graphic display.
Okay.
And they feel that I can do it. When they started saying it at first, I was just thinking, do you guys think that? But I realized that the thing was going on. They were making posters around, so I had no choice but to now start thinking about the problem properly.
Okay.
I told the PDP, now look, your problem is not changing the personality of your chairman, because you have had many and they've not done the work. The major problem is that you have a 25-year-old political party in an environment like ours is due for a complete reform. By reform, I mean, number one, you need to ensure that the ideology underpinning your activities in that party is clear. It must be known to you. It must be known to the Nigerian people. Otherwise, they will not be able to separate between you and your rivals. You just be the same of same. Everybody will just resemble an election platform. That needs to be worked on. The second thing is that you can't have a political party that has lost election three times back to back at that level and is teetering and having crisis all over the place, without going back to your states to remarket and re-image your party. By remarketing and re-imaging the party, I mean you are doing a graphic assessment. Who are the, you know, members of this party, the card-carrying members of this party that you can capture, that is verifiable, that the data is even bankable?
But I thought they did that during Uche Secunda's, when they said they're sorry.
No. That's a rebranding. No, I'm talking about reformation.
Reformation. So what do you think the PDP is? Not a rebranding, but a reformation?
No, it's a, you know, when you rebrand, the way they do rebranding is you kind of like leave the inside of the room dirty and paint the exterior.
Oh.
After 25 years, you need to go back into the interior and fix it from the inside.
Like because, house cleaning.
Yeah, not just house cleaning. Breaking down strongholds, leveling mountain, and making the party to be able to, you know, survive all of time, whether in opposition or in power. You can't have a political party where you are running all over your state. There are 36 of them. And you are handling structure of party to just one individual, as against making sure that a collective group of people own the structure of the party. You can't run a political party on the idea that a zero ideological person is going to be saying he wants to run on your ticket.
Mm.
You are not going to be able to win. You can't have a political party that does not pay it, the members don't pay fees. You can't have a political party that does not even obey its own laws. You have to look at your laws. You say anti-party, what you need to write out what constitutes anti-party, and you need to match it to punishment.
Now, if I become the chairman, okay,
yeah.
Looking at the situation with the Wike, former governor Nyesom Wike,
yeah.
Someone said that I heard someone say that former governor Nyesom Wike has won the PDP 8-0. Looking at what happened in River States, the way the G5, and how would you have handled it differently?
You know, in trying to solve a problem, it's almost like treating cancer. If you go in early, it's a difficult thing to treat. You can still do chemotherapy. You can evacuate the cancerous cells. You can put in money, lifestyle change, and you can hope. When a cancer gets to stage 4, you can only manage the man to death. The scenario that created the characters that allowed the personality of Governor Nyesom Wike to become beyond the management of the people that are managing the party is self-inflicted.
Oh.
It's self-inflicted in the sense that how does a party that came in 1999 gave a Chief Olusegun and Remo Obasanjo, former president, a ticket to become president twice? How did that party get to the point where that same man has the temerity to be tearing the ticket of that party? The ID card. Who was he leaving to help him reform the party? How did that same party get to the point of creating a shoeless man in Goodluck Ebele Jonathan, bringing him from Otuike, putting him in the villa, made him deputy governor, made him governor, made him vice president, made him president? He loses an election, and that same fellow is just meandering all over the world, attending to things that are in other people's country, and he has left his platform unattended. What I'm trying to show you is that we can see a pattern of people that this party has built just moving away and leaving whoever they can see to manage the party. So before long, certain individuals, by virtue of their own energy, now became the ones that everybody was going to meet, to support, to feed, to pay, to this, to that, to brag, to shout, to fight. And before you knew what was happening, the people in the party, the leadership of the party at that level, they became used to that kind of behavior. Now, to win them off it is not a problem, because how many seconds does it take a disciplined party to draw a line and say, this type of behavior is not going to be accepted in
our party? Think you are the new order of the PD?
No, I think that anybody who, the people who know me and know me very, very well, know that. In fact, if I become their chairman, my greatest fear, even for myself, my greatest criticism for myself is, I've been asking myself, would I not even be reforming them too fast? I know the steps by step by step by step by step by step that I need to do. But you know, when you are dealing with human organizations, sometimes you have to introduce a little bit of breaks. Otherwise, I even feel that I'm ahead of my time. I expect a political party to evolve after 25 years into a tribe. When you have a tribe, you're a Yoruba man. Sometimes we are angry with the tribe, or we are angry with what people in the tribe do. But there's nothing we can do. We're members of that tribe. I expect a political party that's 25 years old to evolve to the level of a tribe where we are just PDP people or just whatever name you call yourself, and that's where you are. You will be there. Your child will grow up.
You don't have to cross carpet.
Not just you don't have to cross carpet. The ideology you are professing is so deep and so different from your rival that the basis of cross carpet cannot even occur. But when you have an ideological party that you don't even know, you can't even tell the difference between what they stand for. What does this one stand for? You can't even tell. You have created the political parties in Nigeria. You have reduced them into a cult of human personality.
All right, we need to go on this quick break. And when we're back, we'll talk about Ogun State PDP. Okay. Don't touch that radio.
Okay, so this is your total. Do you need anything else?
Yeah, I would like to pay for the person at the back.
Ah!
In fact, add one pack of Malta Guinness.
Guy, I won't give you my number. Why are you paying for me?
I just feel like doing good. I don't need a reason to share goodness.
Goodness is not just an expression. It's a way of life. So share the goodness with someone today.
Bro, one for me too, Abby.
Yes, so one cold Malta Guinness for you too.
Malta Guinness. Enjoy a world of good.
And we're back on radio. We still have Otuma Segun Showmi right here in the studio. So, Otuma, just a few days ago, we heard that the former governorship candidate of the PDP, talking about Honorable Ladi Adebutu.
Yeah.
He returned to the country after about 6 months in the UK. Now, the PDP in the state has been very silent.
You know, silent on what?
When it comes to doing the duties of the opposition.
What is the duty of the opposition?
Not just criticizing the government.
Exactly.
But also giving us alternative ideas, because there's only one mission, to push the state forward. But we've not really heard anything. Is this on purpose? No. Or is it safe to say that the PDP lost its voice since the election defeat? To the all-progressive campaign? Okay, yeah, it's still in court. What happened?
No. We have not lost our voice. And in fairness to them, they have been writing press releases and all that. The only thing that I notice in Nigeria is that the media seems to happily give more airtime, mention, traction to things that come from the winner. And the people that came short or who were rigged in our case, they don't get as much airtime. If you invite them, they will come. If you put the mic to their mouth, they will say. But if you think that the idea of opposition is to run the state aground and make the state ungovernable, that's not who we are in PDP. The People's Democratic Party is a political party that loves this country and loves this state so much that which we even call criticism, when we criticize them, we're criticizing them to nudge them to do better. We
constructive criticism.
And we have been doing that. But when the entire country is in gloom because of the government of APC at the national, serious gloom. Anybody who tells you the country is not in gloom, tell him I said he's a hypocrite, he's a liar, and all hypocrites will not see heaven. Is it difficult for you now to call your own state and make your state the weeping boy? If others were doing better, or the economy was directly under our purview, then we can criticize him. But we cannot just be saying, be bad marketing Ogun State, be bad mounting our state, be making our state look, you know, worse than every other state, when in the reality, we can even safely state that our state is even one of the ones that is even trying. I can tell you for free, without any apology, our state, they pay salaries as and when due. There are states in this country that they don't even pay salary. There are states in this country that they are giving them fractions of salary. Somebody will get his salary, he'll be getting such a miserably small money, not what is his due. So what are you going to blame him for? If we say, okay, food is expensive, what control have we got on monetary policy and inflation? Okay, I would have blamed him that I didn't hear his voice. when custom people came into Ogun State and started shooting, that is a blame, because whatever the case may be, a governor cannot understand or tolerate why, you know, paramilitary or military organizations in the country underneath the sign that they are doing their job will enter in the midst of his people and start to scare them and start to shoot, especially when there's so much poverty. Or is it until the people die before you talk? So he could have done that. But the real areas that will require us to now begin to clinically look at his policies and all that, I think that will come after the Supreme Court. The PDP people too, they are holding their breath. They are really holding their breath. You know, there's a way you feel when you feel you won an election. There's a way you feel. We really, honestly, PDP, Ogun, we feel cheated. We feel that the system, INEC and all of the people that are including the, we feel that they've cheated us. Because we're not blind. And we're not insensitive to be able to know what took place in the, you know, across the country. Okay, we may go to court and they may be smart, they may have their way, but that does not prevent us. I can't slap you and you'll be presented as if you didn't know that I slapped you. Even if you can't prove it, if there's nobody there, if you called you that I slapped, you know you slapped. So we feel cheated because we truly believe that we won 2023 governorship election. It's a fair and square.
But let's
and we
allow make no courts.
Apology. Yeah, I know now. That's why I'm saying that we are holding our breath. If the court, in a couple of months, a couple of weeks, February, March, latest, by January ending, I think that the Supreme Court will bring in their verdict. If the Supreme Court says they are giving us our mandate, of course we'll go and form government. Let us hope that they'll be able to form and do well. If the Supreme Court says, okay,
otherwise,
we are not the if the Supreme Court says we are not the owner, okay, we'll say, okay, elections are fully now over. Mr. Governor, we'll put your feet to the fire. We'll put your feet to the fire and be seen. And I'll just beg the people in the party, don't give up. It's very painful. We've been in opposition for a long time and it can be very draining. People have been flying in and flying out, flying in and flying out. We are not, those of us that have been standing consistently, we too, we feel tired sometimes. But let us, for the sake of having a balanced democracy, let us try as much as we can. And if, of course, we get to the point where the horse is dead, then we can then think of something else. But for now, let us wait until the Supreme Court.
But thank you very much, Otumba Segun Shomi. It's been nice having this conversation with you. And I like the fact that you were, in fact, brutally honest. Brutally honest. Thank you so much for joining me on the platform on this beautiful Wednesday morning. Compliments of the season again. I'm still expecting my rice. And
okay. We are not in government now. Rice is with the people that are in government.
But anyway, thank you so much. And that's the size of our package on the platform this beautiful Wednesday morning. My name is Binga Oreshegun, the man you just have to love. We'll be back again next week, Monday, by the special grace of God. Good morning and have a beautiful Wednesday.
107.9 FM, your feel-good radio.
Hey there, fabulous people. As we dive into this festive season, brace yourselves for some amazing updates from Africa's number one premium malt brand, Malta Guinness. It is that magical time of the year when joy, love, and kindness fill the air. Let's turn this holiday season into a spectacular celebration of goodness and wellness. And while we are savoring the flavor of the season, let kindness be your companion, adding a touch of goodness to every festive gathering. Whether it is enjoying sumptuous meals, delightful snacks, or those cherished family moments, raise a glass of Malta Guinness and toast to spreading joy and happiness all round. Stay tuned for exciting surprises and goodness-filled activities from Malta Guinness this festive season. Keep an eye out for our special giveaways, events, and experiences that will add a sprinkle of joy to your celebrations. Remember, the essence of Christmas is sharing. Let's come together to create a world of good, ensuring everyone feels the warmth and joy of the season. Malta Guinness, enjoy a world of good.
Wọ́n yẹ ṣe borí ooru àyíká tó jíire ní ṣàtọ́kùn fàlàáfíà ẹ jẹ́ ká tọ́jú ilé ká tọ́jú ara wa ká sì tún tọ́jú àyíká wa pẹ̀lú káàrùn àtàìsàn ó lè ba jìnà sí wa fresh fm ló ní ìmọ́tótó ṣe pàtàkì.
kálùlù kálùlù kódìjó kálùlù kódìjó kápẹ́bí kódò.